Thanks, Sinead. Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome to the programme. Between now and nine, cap inspections lifted on small farms. What, if any, difference will it make when digging a hole for yourself becomes a solution, not a problem? This little shop went to market, finding alternative routes to a farm's customers. World Meteorological Day today, I have just learned in the forecast before 8 o'clock. And whatever about whether it does or it doesn't snow, hasn't the rain just been desperate? Some weather stations have by now measured the rainfall since last August as the wettest 8 months since Irish meteorological records began. The wettest 8 months since records began. The water table is right below and in many cases above the surface of the ground. This has, as you would imagine, been incredibly disruptive of all kinds of farming. Grazing and sowing in particular, obviously. And anyone who was hoping that this week would see a break in that weather was to be sorely disappointed.
The showers will mainly affect the north and west at first, but will quickly become widespread.
Later in the day, showers may turn wintry on high ground.
Some of those showers will be heavy and there's a chance of hail.
Some of the showers will be heavy with hail and a slight chance of thunder.
And some of those will turn heavy with the chance of an isolated thunderstorm.
So this lower field down here, in an extremely wet time, you might have a small area of it, that would be just wet. Whereas now there's water sitting on a couple of acres of it.
Nothing's grown there.
The crop is gone, it's been under.
Mervyn Heatley is a North Wicklow tillage farmer. He drove me around acres of land to all intents and purposes underwater.
This is quite a gently sloping field. You would think that all things being equal, it should drain quite well.
You would, and it always has done up until now. But these are new springs coming up out of the ground. The water table is just so high that it's just coming up out of the ground everywhere.
He hasn't been able to sow anything yet on 50 acres of his own farm, and the neighbour who he contracts for has got no seed in the ground across the entire farm. He and his father are farming here long enough to know that this is more than a run of a few bad years.
How has the weather changed?
Wetter. In a nutshell, wetter. Summertime is wetter. Parts of it may be drier, but then you get this deluge of heavy rain, whereas before we might have got, a few showers, whereas now it's heavy rain. I mean, if you're combining 5 years ago and you would have got a shower of rain, or even 10 years ago, a shower of rain, and maybe, 2 hours later you were up and running again. But now with the deluge of rain you get, that's it, you're going home. That's you won't get going again that day, or maybe not the next day.
I've heard some people using the term whiplash weather, that you're being shunted from one extreme to another, deluge to drought. Does it feel like that sometimes?
Maybe so. I mean, what's more apparent is the time frame, the window of opportunity to get things done is being squeezed and squeezed, narrower and narrower. Whereas if you once, a couple of years ago, you might have had, 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks to get this baling done or whatever it was. Now you have 3 or 4 days before the next deluge rain, and you just can't get cover the ground. You can't get things done.
Oh, that's going to take my boot.
And have you many little pockets like this appearing around the farm, Donal?
Just on the lower lying ground, just where there'll be a hollow in the field, you might get a bit of that. The
lower ground. In South Kildare, dairy farmer Donal Kavanagh is looking at parts of his farm that are now effectively off limits.
And you can see the cows there in the bank, but they can't come down here until we get that dry weather.
Okay, so how many acres is that?
So you're talking about 25, 30 acres here. That, I will have to work around it.
Donal should have been putting his cows out to grass 50 days ago, but they've only been out a total of 20 days on and off.
We put them across the road here about 9 o'clock this morning.
sort. And they won't go back out after second milking, will they?
No, not tonight. When I got up this morning, it was pouring rain. Now, I checked my phone last night, there was no sign of rain at all. So, you know, it's just, there's nothing settled.
And 2 weeks have gone. There was one stage there, it was a full 2 weeks. We couldn't put them out at all because there was no point. One day was worse than the next.
Do you get a sort of a mounting sense of anxiety? Oh, God, here we are, another day in.
No, I just on the day, you just look out. You might have a look at the field. You'd make, you look at your phone, you make your best decision. Some days it works out, some days it doesn't. Some days, come 12 o'clock, you might have to just head for home if the downpour started. Other days, you mightn't have been so sure and it could work out a great day. And that's just, every day, you just take your decision on the day. You can't say we'll have
to take anything for granted.
No, absolutely can't. Not for no.
So there's no planning.
No planning whatsoever.
Are you behind on all of the other jobs?
Everything is behind. Yeah, slurry spreading, fertiliser.
And the financial costs of the spring calendar being turned upside down in this way are huge.
It's all cost. You know, it's probably, I think, a figure of maybe €1.50 per head per day of an extra cost because they can't go out. And if you work it back then on 100 cows, you're talking about maybe €1,800 by the end of the week, in 1 week alone. And if you double that to 200 cows, it just goes on, multiplies. So that's the sort of money that's costing you extra every day you can't get out the grass.
So that could be almost €4,000 a week if it was to rain 7 days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the cost that would be involved.
How many years in the last 10 has this happened to you now?
You probably get one every, maybe every 3 or 4 years. Do you know? But in the last 5, I just feel things have, we'll say, were extreme, more extreme as regards drought in the summer. And maybe you're going to get this extreme wetness. You know, and the back end of the year was very similar as well. There hasn't been a dry spell in the last 7 months.
So you're going from one extreme to the other of your grass getting burned off or your grass just being too wet to put either tractor or animal on it.
Absolutely, yeah. I know, look at it, sometimes it can turn around very quickly, but in the meantime, it is costing a lot of money and it's hard work.
All the projections from the meteorologists and the scientists are that we can look forward to more of that, more drought, more heavy downpours.
Well, I suppose I've sort of come to the realisation, I think, that at this stage, you know, climate change is happening and we have to maybe try and adapt to that. And I suppose it's changing the way we're thinking about a lot of things. And I suppose, you know, we're getting first-hand experience as regards, you know, weather events there in this operation. Anyway, I can see it. And I've seen it the last few years. It's just a bit different than what we were used to, you know.
Is this sustainable? Do you think that somebody will be growing barley or raping these fields in 30 years' time?
I don't know, but if they're not, what are we going to eat? I mean, you know, the barley I grow feed barley, and we all, you know, half the country goes down and has their chicken fillet roll at lunchtime or whatever, but what do the chickens eat? They eat cereals. So, I mean, everything has a knock-on effect. And if we think that we're, oh, no, it's okay, Ireland, we don't need to grow food. I mean, of course we need to grow food. We should be self-sufficient, actually. We shouldn't need all these hundreds of thousands of tons coming in from Canada or of grain. But we do.
Mervyn Heatley and Donal Kavanagh there, grappling with the new reality of what more chaotic weather might mean for what it is that they do. This whole conversation around climate change and what impact it is or it isn't having and will increasingly have is obviously something that we've been talking about a lot on this programme because, of course, food producers are at the very sharp end of this. But the way that we have been talking about it in Ireland has become a very technical issue. Sectoral ceiling emissions levels, MAC curves, carbon budgets. It doesn't exactly help you keep in sight why it is that we are taking all of these climate actions. Well, when not countrywiding in the course of the last 2 years, I've been making a series of documentaries for television, which should hopefully put all of that back into its proper perspective. You will get to see for yourself, if you give us 3 hours over the next three Wednesdays, rather than getting told by somebody what it is that is unfolding all around the world, and how it's unfolding an awful lot faster than the official record would suggest, and what impact all of this is going to end up having here in Ireland, and how there is also, and this is the key thing, how there is also still so much that can be done to lessen the impact of the worst of what it is that is coming. Three programmes, next three Wednesday nights, 9:35, RTE1. It's called Rising Tides. If you find what it is that we've been doing here on the climate and the biodiversity crisis interesting, I think you'll find this interesting too. It is, of course, not just the uncertainties of weather that farmers have to cope with, but price too. Some farmers now are trying to get better prices for their products by selling directly to the public through their own farm shops, and they are a valuable alternative route to market to the supermarkets. Or are they more effort than they are actually worth? I'm joined this morning by some farmers who are now in the business of having a farm shop. John Graham from the Ballyholy Farm Shop, Justina Gavin from Honestly Farm Kitchens and Drumanilra Farm in Roscommon, and Sarah Carney from Bonyabo Uir in Clonakilty in County Cork. Good morning to all three of you. John, can I begin with you first, please? You're a beef and vegetable farmer in Donegal. What was it that literally inspired you to set up shop?
Morning, Philip. What inspired me to set up was, I suppose, and that was 10 years ago now since I set up the farm shop. And at that time, I just felt that the direction we were in, which was it was all wholesale at that time, the margins were getting tighter and tighter, and it was, the volumes were getting smaller and smaller. We were moving every year. So I just seen that route we were going down wasn't going to last. So I had to look for an alternative way of working. And we'd been on a family holiday out in Pennsylvania in America, up in Amish country. And I noticed how a lot of the farms out there had their own farm stand or small farm shop at the bottom of their lane. And I thought to myself that this might be the route that we go down.
Really?
The shorter the distance that the produce goes, the more chance there is of us being able to return a margin.
That's amazing. Can I be rude and cut straight to the chase here? Having decided to do this now, are you better off than you were 10 years ago?
Well, I'd say for the first 2 or 3 years, it maybe take a good bit of work and effort to get it up and running. But gradually people could see, when people are coming and dealing directly with you, they see the effort that you're putting in and how hard you're working, and they're willing to pay the extra money because they see you're not living a fancy lifestyle and charging a big price. You need this extra price because that's what it takes to grow the produce.
I think one of the most fascinating developments in what it is that you're doing, John, though, is this symbiotic relationship that you have developed with local restaurants. Tell me how that works.
Yeah, so I suppose through time, local restaurants got to hear about what we were doing. And some of the chefs were coming to the farmer's market and to the farm shop. And they started buying produce from us. And then gradually, as we built up our farm shop, we were looking to sell more products in it. So we were selling veg to the restaurants, and then we're buying back soup and ready-made meals that the restaurants are making with our produce, and we're selling them now in the shop.
So they're making meals with locally grown produce, and you're buying locally grown produced food from your own raw materials and selling it back to your customers, which presumably answers that question of convenience for most people, because, you know, let's face facts, going to a farm shop and buying the raw ingredients is not always the most convenient thing in the world.
No, that's it. I suppose during it's been a really roller coaster this last 5 years, because during COVID, everybody was cooking and everybody had time and everybody was buying raw ingredients. But we find this last year or two that it's going back the other way again. So the fast-paced lifestyle. So we need to get back into catering for the people that don't have time to cook with the raw ingredients anymore and have ready-made meals for them. But it has turned full circle. I suppose the farm was carrying the shop maybe for the first couple of years, but now, like as you were saying in your last article there, that the weather was so bad this year, we would find that the farm shop will be carrying the farm. So it has turned around that the farm shop was the best route to go down.
Really? Okay. Justina Gavin from Honestly Kitchen in Strandhill, County Sligo and Carrick and Shannon. When you met your husband at a Concern Worldwide party in Kigali in Rwanda, did you imagine it was going to end up in Drumanilra Organic Farm in Roscommon?
Good morning. No, not really. But actually, from when we first met, we actually realised we shared quite a lot of interests around kind of food and farming. And, you know, one of the first conversations we had was around Liam had been talking about his family farm back here in Roscommon and how he'd love to come back here one day and see if he could make a go of it. So.
And it was wanting to control your own route to market that inspired you to set up a shop, just like John.
Yeah, it was. It was a couple of things, really. I mean, really, for us, it kind of, the idea sort of gelled when we started planning for our own family. So we started just thinking about food, about the kind of food we were eating, the kind of food we wanted to feed our kids, the nutritional value of that, but also the environmental impact of the way that was being produced as well. So we knew that we wanted to farm organically. We knew we wanted to find ways of producing food, which was good in the sense of healthy, but also healthy in the way it was produced. But we also knew we wanted to produce food that we wanted to eat ourselves on the farm, but also that we wanted to find a way of supplying that food straight to our, direct to our own customers as well.
But this is no little rinky-dink mom and pop operation now. You're employing 65 people.
We are now. We've been through a lot of twists and turns over the last 10 years. But yeah, we finally got the Honestly Farm kitchens open just after COVID at the end of 2021. We have the farm, we have the two restaurants, we also have an organic bakery as well. We bake certified organic breads to supply into the restaurants. So yeah, it's turned into quite a big operation.
Huge amount of work, and I'd imagine a huge amount of human resource management as well. But again, allow me to be rude, please, Justina. Bottom line, are you significantly better off than you were if you would have just been farming and farming alone?
I think so. I mean, we're getting there. Look, we're just, I think this year will be our break-even year. So it has taken a lot of work and a lot of investment. And we've made lots of mistakes. And but we sort of feel like everything is kind of falling into place now. We're kind of at a scale where it's starting to make sense, I suppose. And there's just something really, really satisfying about being proud of the food we're producing, having that relationship with our customers, and yeah, seeing it all start to come together, really.
Now, I hope that Sally Carney, listening in Clonakilty from outside her horse box, where she's just about to go off and start selling her milk, is taking heart from this, because, Sally, you're only 5 weeks in business now.
Yes, 5 weeks. We're brand new.
And what is it you do?
So we have a mobile milk vending machine, is what we're calling it. So we have a herd of Jersey cows that we milk, and we bring the milk back to our house where we have a smart micro dairy out the back, and we pasteurise the milk and transfer it into two tanks into a milk vending machine, and we head off with our horse box then to various locations in Clon and sell the milk directly to the customers.
So it is pasteurised, it's not raw milk. And where are you selling it? Where has worked for you so far?
So we're still learning. We're going to different locations. We're staying in Clon. We're trying to go to different sides of Clon to build up a customer base. We've gone to Onahincha Viewpoint, it's called, a gorgeous location over in Onahincha, and that's definitely been our busiest venue.
And what about going outside the gyms?
Yeah, so we've been invited to go to gyms because it's a great recovery drink, because Jersey milk has 18% higher protein. So my daughter's been doing a great job on Instagram, and people have been contacting us, asking us, will we call down and be outside when people are finished in the gym or finish their classes and things like that. That's been a great success as well.
How important is the social media in this, Sally?
Really important. I mean, I gave out flyers because obviously I'm older, but Madeline did the Instagram and the TikTok. And nearly
the flyer seems very 20th century now, doesn't it?
I know. I didn't know any better. But so she did a TikTok video that has over 100,000 views. And her Instagram is fantastic. There everyone who comes in, it's Instagram and TikTok. Yeah.
So you can keep your flyers. All right, Sally, good luck with it. Let me bring
thank
in,
you very much.
Let me bring in Barry Caslin from Chagas here. Barry, how many farm shops is Chagas aware of? Is this still dropping the ocean territory, or are they growing in number?
Morning, Philip. Yeah, there's a lot of them around the country and they're springing up all the time. And I suppose there's various types of farm shops right across the country. You know, you're talking about honesty boxes, you're talking about the larger scale, which Justine and Liam are doing there in Carrig-on-Shannon and Strandhill. And then you're talking about, you know, ordinary farm shops that you see right across Europe. They're very common in Germany and France and right across Europe. And to be at a smaller scale, but there's probably, I'm aware of about 70 of them in Ireland at the moment, but at different levels, some of them directly selling milk, or it could be the farm shop where there's a number of products on offer.
Okay, 70 of them, but 137,000 farms around the country, so we're still in the foothills of this. Yeah. If you were of a mind to do it, Barry, what kind of help is available?
Yeah, I suppose in terms of supports that's available there, you know, you have several avenues of support, you know, that farm shops can look at. Firstly, the local enterprise offices, they offer very valuable assistance. You know, they provide mentorship services, guidance on various aspects of the business development. You know, they help entrepreneurs to navigate the process of setting up and running a successful farm shop.
Okay, so Leo, what about Chagask yourselves?
Yeah, Chagas, they play a vital role in the food development unit, particularly through entities like More Park Technologies Limited. You know, they offer courses and services such as new product development workshops, there's cheese making courses, there's ice cream making courses, bread making courses. And of course, we're linked in with the new BIA Innovator Campus in Athenry as well. And that provides a great platform for collaboration and innovation in the food sector. You know, if people want to use kitchen areas to develop a new product that they want to sell, whether it's their own cheese, their own pasteurizing their milk, and they want to perfect that, they want to learn about labeling and packaging, all that information is available.
Very good. So Leo, Local Enterprise Office, Chagask, Leader, and obviously the Educational Training Boards as well. Barry Castlin, thank you very much. Sally Carney, Justina Gavin, and indeed John Graham as well. Thank you all very much and good luck. Let's take a break.
Email countrywide at rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
I have one of those niggling questions arising from that last item. Honesty boxes, do they really work? Are we actually honest enough for them? Is it a realistic option? Please, 51551, can you tell me, is this something that is a proper, practical, realistic alternative to a full-time staffed shop? 51551. The real political anger that we saw in farmers' protests across Europe has resulted this week in policy changes that are, depending on your point of view, being claimed as a victory for farmers and common sense or an undermining of the EU's Green New Deal. The Commission has proposed making farms across Europe smaller than 10 hectares, 22 acres, exempt from CAP inspections and payment penalties. This here could impact up to 28,000 mostly beef and sheep farmers in the west of the country. Natasha Foote is a freelance journalist specialising in EU agri-food policy, joining me on the line now from Brussels. Good morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Philip.
This is a pretty big move by EU standards that has been made very quickly. Why has it happened?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, as you mentioned there, you know, we're very aware the farmers have been taken to the streets in protest since the beginning of this year. They've been increasingly dominating headlines, but also increasingly the political agenda. So there's a multitude of reasons behind these protests. It's mainly around fair remuneration, issues to do with trade, but also about the administrative burden on farmers. So on the back of this, the Commission came forward with these proposals, as you mentioned. The idea is to help address farmers' concerns and ease their burdens. So one of these is this simplification package. It's designed to lighten the administrative load on farmers. There's also another reflection paper on improving the farmers' position in the food chain. But as you said, this is a pretty big move because this simplification proposal paves the way for a reopening of the legal acts of the EU's farming subsidy programme, the CAP, which would see mandatory environmental requirements downgraded to voluntary, for example, and a number of other proposals, as you mentioned.
Will it lighten the administrative load of farmers, or will it hollow out the Green New Deal and the environmental measures, as some environmental NGOs are saying? Or can we know at all in the absence of any kind of an impact assessment?
Absolutely. That's the thing. I mean, the stated aim is reducing the administrative burden, but it's hard to say as there's been no impact assessment. So this is justified because of the urgency of the situation, because of the crisis situation in the sector, although there's no details often on what this constitutes. But there has been no impact assessment, so it's very difficult to say. And instead, there was a kind of ad hoc one-week consultation. There was some written correspondence with four main EU farming groups. And this has sparked quite an outrage because it is a big policy shift. I mean, most significantly, the proposal does shift the power balance in favour of member states. It grants them greater power to allow further exemptions to green measures in the future. So, you know, green groups are calling for an, kind of an external audit of the Commission's conduct here. And remember, this is a policy we've discussed, you know, been under discussion for 3, maybe 4 years, which has been changed, you know, in a week. So,
lifting cap inspections does sound dramatic, Natasha, but there is some doubt if that many farms are actually going to have been inspected in the first place.
Yeah, there's the, you know, there's some. It's difficult to say, as I said, there's no impact assessment. But there, you know, there were some numbers that I was looking at the data, which said that, you know, only maybe 1% of farms are really subject to farm checks anyway. And so the question is, you know, how many is really going to impact? You know, it's not really clear. There was a bit of a mixed bag of reactions, as you mentioned. I mean, for the EU Farmers Association, Copacajeca, they said the conditions are too rigid, it doesn't reflect the reality on the ground. But you know, not everyone's happy. I mean, for example, IFOAM, for you know, you'd think it might benefit maybe organic farmers, but IFOAM, which is the EU Organics Association, they called this simplification without vision. Green campaigners are saying it's catastrophic. It comes on the back of some warnings from the European Environmental Agency, which published a climate risk assessment, first of its kind, in the same week as the announcement. Okay. So it's a mixed bag. And the small farmers as well, they say, you know, this is not really addressing the core of the problem for them. It's not really addressing the systemic issues, the reason that they're taking to the streets. As I mentioned, the fair remuneration and the trade. So they don't see it as a win for them either.
Separately, and before I let you go, Natasha, the highly contested nature restoration law has taken another dramatic turn just when it looked in danger of fading from the headlines. What's
Indeed.
Happened?
No fear of it fading anytime soon. Yes, the notorious nature restoration law. So just as a reminder, this is aiming to reverse the decline of Europe's nature, has an ambition to restore 20% of the EU's land and sea by areas by 2030, and then, you know, gradually move up to full health by 2050. A landmark text of the European Green Deal, but extremely contentious, as we said. It's been a very rocky road to this point. It survived various lobbying attempts to kill it along the way. It moved all the way through what we call trilogue, so the institutional, inter-institutional negotiations. So it got all the way through to a compromise, and at this point needs a kind of a green light and a tick from both lawmakers, so from the Parliament and the Council. It won the tick from the Parliament back in February, and was due to have a vote, a technical vote yesterday, and then be officially have the green light on Monday with a meeting of EU environmental ministers. But actually, so normally this is a mere formality. You know, it's been discussed to death, multiple rounds of technical discussions. But this time it's actually proved very contentious because a number of member states came out and said they couldn't support the text or they would abstain from the vote. And collectively, that would mean there was not going to be enough of a majority okay. to pass the law, which means that the vote has now been postponed, pushed somewhere in the future. There's no details on when that will be, just later notice. So it was taken off the agenda for Monday.
Just very briefly, who are the countries that have indicated that if they were asked to vote, that they would vote against it?
Yes, there's Italy, Netherlands, Sweden, Poland, Finland and Hungary. I hope I've got them all there. And a few abstentions, so Belgium and Austria okay. were also abstaining.
All right, Natasha Foote in Brussels, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. The hare's corner. It's an old farming expression for an awkward corner of a field or an area of rough ground that was hard to farm and so ended up being left to nature. The Burrenbio Trust's Hare's Corner project is entering its fourth year now, and across Clare, where it was launched, and County Mayo, where it recently spread, there's about 300 participants who have dug ponds, planted native trees or traditional orchards, or have availed of an ecologist's advice on how to manage their land for nature. Now, the Hare's Corner is happy to announce that if you're living in Galway, Meath, Mayo or Leitrim, you too can now apply to become part of the project. Lee Worrell from the Hare's Corner joins me now. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Philip.
If you want to do something good for nature, then why do you think that this one is a good one to consider?
Well, this is a great one. You know, it's really easy. It's these easy, actionable steps. And it really is so beneficial. The mini orchard, you know, within the first few years, you're picking apples off and eating them right from your back garden. The wildlife pond, as soon as it's dug and fills with water, you're seeing immediate, you know, immediate visitors, birds and frogs spawn, herons landing. And the mini woodland, you know, it might take some time to come on, but immediately, you know, spiders are building webs. And just, it's not only a benefit for nature, but it's really a great, it has positive mental impact on the humans that are doing these things.
Okay, you're selling me. If I was to be accepted into the project, excluding the fact that I don't live in Galway, Meath, Mayo or Leitrim, but if I was to be accepted in, what kind of practical help can you then offer?
Yeah, so you'd be able to apply for either one or all five actions that we offer. And with those, each one is sort of separate. So with the wildlife pond and the plan for nature, those we conduct a site visit. So you would have either a hydrologist or an ecologist come to your site and walk the site with you, find the best place for the pond, go over all of the details of how you would communicate with the excavator driver, you know, very gentle slopes, how it's being fed. And then for the plan for nature, how would you like to manage your land? How do you want to make changes to increase biodiversity? So those ones are an in-person site visit. Mm-hmm. And then for the mini orchard and the mini woodland, we host webinars and training sessions. And then in the winter months, when the roots go dormant, we would have the handout days. So well before the handout days, we would, you know, send out resources and have all of these webinars for, you know, making sure that you are set up for the best success for planting and maintaining your trees.
I hate to sound coarse and transactional, but you're missing out on one of the major selling points here. You're offering all of this ultimately for free.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. You know, we do want them to have a bit of skin in the game take some, you know, do some research. And obviously they have to plant these trees on their own. They have to maintain the pond. But it's really easy actions, hassle-free, and it's amazing to be able to create so many new habitats. Over 600 new hare's corners or mini habitats have been created through the project so far. And just to think about, you know, 14,000 woodland trees, close to 2,000 orchard trees. You know, you were talking earlier in the show about why to have these climate actions. And instead of driving to the store, just walk out in your back garden and pick some apples, and there's your food.
Yeah. Do I have to have a large amount of land with a spring feeding a potential pond, or is this something that can be done in gardens?
Yeah, this is for anybody, anyone who owns land. So if you're a private landowner with small holding, school or community group, up to farmer, you know, anyone can apply. So we are expanding into Galway City. So we'll really be exploring more of the urban environment and how we can cater to very small holdings.
Okay. Lee Worrell, thank you very much. More details, burrenbio.com/THC, as in the Hare's Corner, /THC. Well, obviously the weather is wet, as we have been discussing. But when those clouds do part, the bright blue skies remind us that it is actually spring and that the glory of summer lies ahead, the season of festivals, shows and fairs. In Limerick, the bank holiday Kilmallock Mart was buzzing this week, as well as the buying and selling in the Mart Ring. There's a market outside and plenty of people out to meet and greet each other at the end of winter. Hannah Quinn Mulligan went along.
A great day. Why is it so great?
Because I like the cows.
You like the cows? And what were you rubbing earlier?
Uh,
were
inside the pens?
A rooster.
And do you have any cattle yourselves? Are you buying or selling anything?
Their granddad is a farmer over in Tipperary, so they would have gone to the market with him. And we said we'd come over for the day and see what was here, didn't you?
Yeah.
You enjoying it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Lots of excitement, as you can hear, at Kilmallock Mart in County Limerick today. And I've just stepped inside to the calf area that was mentioned there. A lot of calves getting ready before they're being sold. And I have to say, they all seem to have very full bellies. They seem very content lying down on a really comfortable bed of nice, fresh golden straw. And I guess here to talk about the sale day is Shane Egan, who's a mart manager here with GVM. Shane, how many cows and calves are being sold today?
So between calves, big animals, everything, you're looking at about 1,700 animals here today altogether. Loads of demand for grass cows, and the beef is going well, so great demand for the beef cows as well. Even though the weather hasn't been great, even cattle trades, there's with Angus whiteheads out of Frisian cows, and they're making in excess of €3 a kilo. The Frisian bullock whelans 2 to 220 or 230 a kilo, with prices up to 250 last week a kilo. Then with beef, bullocks and heifers, they're in excess €3 a kilo for the better type animals, with Angus's last week over €3 a kilo, and the Frisians around 250 a kilo.
Chatting to a lot of my dairy farmer neighbours, they're hoping to offload calves this week in the mart. So how have calf sales been?
Calf, for the stronger calf, very, very good. Loads of customers, loads of farmer customers. For the lighter calf, it's pretty much impossible to sell them. Those lighter Frisian bull calves, you're looking 5, 10 euro, 15 euro max for the lighter bull calves. And some days, if there's no exports happening, you're lucky to get a home for them.
But do you think some farmers have a bit more cop on now in regard to the lighter calves, that they keep keeping them a bit longer if they can?
Look, it's I don't know, it's a pain to keep them longer, but they should be keeping them longer. Stronger Frisian calves, they've made 80 to 120 here this morning and last week and during the week. So, look, they are making money if they can keep them. And I think overall people are improving at it. So they are.
Great. Best of luck for the rest of the day.
Thanks very much.
I must be coming there. Oh my God, am I coming here? 30 years.
30 years, and yeah. What are you selling?
Should I meet you or what is it?
You are not, are you?
I've won kinder the race.
And what are you selling here at the market today?
Carrots, cabbage, onions, cooking apples, daffodils.
Daffodils?
marmalade and honey. But the honey is from Waterford now.
Is it all right, okay?
And eggs are local. They're not my own, but they're local.
And how's it going for you? What are the customers like?
Oh, good enough. Yeah. I seem to be pleased with me.
And is it always busy on a bank holiday Monday?
Yeah. But busier than... Not as busy as before.
Is it a bit tough? You're saying you've been doing this over 30 years. I mean, were there lots of... Are there fewer sellers than there were 30 years ago?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. Big time.
And what used to be here 30 years ago when you started coming?
Oh, they'd be half full on a normal day.
Yeah.
Now there's only two, three maybe.
Sellers.
Two and three.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Drifting away. But you see, the children are, they're all qualified now, aren't they? They go to college. Yeah. But I send mine to college too. And I walk 5 miles to the garden. I did. Not every day now. Yeah.
And you got to put your children through college just selling fruit and veg?
But I had a husband working.
What's popular today? What's selling well?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, the carrots are, and they're from France.
Really?
Yeah. All our own have gone now with the wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary, thank you very much. Best of luck. And if anyone's looking for you today, it's Mary Battles. That's your name.
Perfect.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for that.
Hannah Quinn Mulligan in Kilmallock Mart. Another sign of spring. The cherry blossom trees in gardens across the country bursting into bloom. And another hardy perennial of spring Countrywide, playing you out with a version of John Spillane's Dance of the Cherry Trees, which was recorded specially for this programme. Thanks very much for listening today. The people who did to this morning's Countrywide, What Spring Does to the Cherry Tree, were Liam Mullen, Amandine Paso-Devine and Eileen Heron. Until next weekend, have a good day.
Let me tell you about the cherry trees. Every April in our town, they put on the most outrageous clothes and they sing and they dance around. Hardly anybody sings or dances. Hardly anybody dances or sings in this town that I call my own. You have to hand it to the cherry trees.